Thank you very much. Many thanks for all the organizers. A special thank for Atlas Network that financed this policy paper we are presenting. I co-authored it with my friend and colleague Mohamed Nouri. This paper has a very long story. This was supposed to be the subject of a workshop in Tunisia, but taking into account the political pressure there, the organizers decided to move the workshop here, and this gave us, of course, the pleasure to meet in all of you, and that was, I'm afraid, a bad cause, but there are some advantages, so we are happy for that. So many thanks for all those who contributed to make this project possible. The paper was written in Arabic, and it is being translated, and it will be published both in Arabic and in English very shortly, at least on the website of the ILN. So I am not going to dive too much in its technicalities, because there are things I consider that are easier read than heard. I would like instead to tell you a story. So, the date is 1793. The place is Paris. More specifically, just in front of the guillotine. A lady by the name of Madame du Barry, who was the mistress of Louis XV, is being executed. And she was talking with the hangman, who was in charge of her beautiful head, and she kept telling him, "Please, Mr. Executioner, please give me 5 minutes more. Please give me 5 minutes more." And I think this little story summarizes very beautifully and very sadly the situation of the economy in Tunisia. Mr. Hangman, Mr. Executioner, or rather Mrs. Reality, 5 minutes more. Give us 5 minutes more. And this has been the case for a very, very, very long time. I think since the end of the 1990s. At least, according to the World Bank, that published in 2006 a report about Tunisia, it said it clearly. The model of development adopted by Tunisia has reached its limit. And reforms are necessary. Painful reforms are necessary. And since that time, we have been officially talking about painful reforms. But what we are doing, Mrs. Reality, please give us 5 minutes more. I will talk about the last chapter of this parody, which is the current one. Then, if time allows, I will give you some other chapters, but I can talk a long time about the subject. So, the last chapter, the current one. Tunisia is sitting on the verge of bankruptcy. It is not me who said that. It is Fitch rating, for example. Fitch has rated our public debt CCC minus with negative perspective, which means that Tunisia is currently a junk state. So it is not very advisable to invest money in Tunisia. Okay, and it is the last step before rating that are equal to default. So Tunisia is in a very, very dangerous situation when it comes to its public debt. Countries in this situation would normally go to the IMF, because it is the only lender capable of providing some injection of cash in order to avoid the worst scenario. And Tunisia has been negotiating with the IMF for at least three years now. And a staff level agreement was reached in October 2022. So at that time, we thought all that the worst scenario is going to be avoided, at least for the foreseeable future. But this hasn't been the case. Why? Because the president, our president, said, Mrs. Reality, please give us 5 more minutes. The president has rejected the agreement his own government negotiated with the IMF. Why? Saying that he doesn't accept diktats from the foreign world. And Tunisia, being a sovereign country, we are going to count upon ourselves without, of course, specifying which resources he intends to mobilize in order to apply or to fulfill that wish. Why Tunisia has reached this situation? Because the current power is counting on geopoliticizing Tunisian economic situation. Very clearly, it is maybe vicious, but this is the bet, I think. Tunisian current government thinks that Europeans will not allow Tunisia to default because of European fear about immigration. And indeed, this bet, this very dangerous bet from the government, was about to be fulfilled successfully in May or June, when the European Union offered a bailout solution, alternative supposedly to be an alternative to the IMF bailout program. And what did Tunisia do? Give me 5 minutes more. Because, of course, this bailout solution or bailout program, European one, was conditioned by, first of all, a strong engagement from the Tunisian government against illegal immigration. And very, very surprisingly, it was also conditioned by Tunisia reaching an agreement with the IMF. So again, Tunisia is saying the famous word: "Give me 5 minutes more." This is the current situation. But why Tunisia has reached this dangerous cliff? Because I think we have a structural problem, a deep structural problem. Tunisia is a net importer. It has always been a net importer because it imports energy, it imports food, and it imports machines. Tunisia has been compensating for its negative trade balance it has been running. It has been compensating for that through its services, especially its tourism, but also through its relatively rigorous management of its public finance before 2011. The problem that these two conditions dependent on one factor: the stability of a rather dictatorial authoritarian regime. In 2011, this regime fell, as you know very well. You know the political story, I think. It is very famous. The economic story is less famous because it is much more infamous. Indeed, Tunisia found itself torn between difficult choices. Of course, tourism was partially lost because of the instability, so that there were less resources. And this is very important, social stability was lost. And social peace could only be bought through government expenditure, through public expenditure, through government intervention. So the government became, the state became, the employer of last resort, so it accepted many, many, many workers it did not need. It extended its expenditure to support state-owned enterprises, to save them, to bail out them. It increased its subsidies, especially in terms of energy, etc. So this situation meant that resources were decreasing and expenditure was highly increasing. How did Tunisia manage to pay for that? Very simple, to borrow. And this, the result of that, that Tunisia could reached an unprecedented level of its national debt. It is currently around 85%, something like that, more or less 85% of our GDP. External, yeah. And it is mainly external, it is an external debt, which means that we have to pay for it in hard currency. How did Tunisia succeed in convincing lenders to give these finances? Through its democratic reputation. The problem that this democratic reputation has been lost since the 25th of July 2021. Sorry. Now, in addition to this structural problem, we have a very deep, I would call it cultural problem, a mindset. This mindset is related to our anti-liberalism. Tunisia is one of the most anti-liberal countries I can imagine. In terms of its culture, its elites, most of them, consider that the word liberalism itself is an insult. I have many, many colleagues who tell me, Ayman, you have to defend yourself. People speak of you and they say that you are a liberal. So I have to defend myself against that. And this meant that when the revolution came, political liberalism that came with it in the form of democracy and democratic means was mixed with an anti-liberal culture that meant that the economy was kind of taboo. Because there was a kind of, I don't know how to call it, because it is very strange. Everyone agreed, there was a consensus, that Tunisia needed to change its model of development. But having said that, no one would tell you exactly in which direction we should go. Why? Because everyone knew that realistically, the only possible direction we should go is a kind of social liberalism with a market-driven economy and to encourage enterprises, etc. But no one wanted to do that. Certainly trade unions did not want to do that because of their interests and because of the dominant discourse that prevented such a direction. Intellectuals were absolutely against this way because by adopting anti-liberal discourse, it was easy for them to adopt radical positions while not doing anything. And politicians were fearful of any steps that went against public opinion. How much time have I got?
5 minutes.
5 minutes left. Okay, so this meant that revolution in Tunisia was interpreted under a mixed light. We were for democracy, but we were against liberalism. And this is, I think, a very problematic situation because, frankly, I don't know anything else but liberal democracy. The term illiberal democracy, I don't really know what it does mean. And revolutions have two spirits. The first one is anti-privileges. The second one is pro-privileges. The first one says we have to be equal, so we have to fight against privileges. The second one says we are equal, so we have to share privileges. And I don't think that I am overstating the situation when I say that Tunisian problem was that the second spirit over-dominated Tunisian experience. We were all trying to find some ways to share privileges rather than to be fighting against privileges. This situation can be summarized in my first statement. Mrs. Reality, please give us 5 more minutes. We did not want in Tunisia to pay the price of a change. We did want to have democracy. I think that most people wanted democracy, but we understood democracy in a very totalitarian way. We thought that democracy meant an overarching state that would go everywhere to promote its presence and to provide people with services. And when some voices said that what we should do is to move from this mindset, to move from a state that wants to do everything in order to have a state that gives more opportunities. When these voices were trying to make an argument, they were simply accused of being liberal, and that was enough to discredit them in the eyes of the public. So our paper tried to find a kind of compromise between what the people want, what the people need, but what reality dictates in order to overcome this trap of, please, Mrs. Reality, give us 5 minutes more. Thank you very much.